to look at climate risk to your portfolio because the financial risks are so significant.
And finally, what do you think, Scott Wallace, your grandfather, the late Vice President Henry Wallace, would say to President Trump today?
I think he would say, please resign. Just go away. He's bad for the country.
Scott Wallace and Ellen Dorsey of the Wallace Global Fund. And in full disclosure, Democracy Now! Is also supported by the Wallace Global Fund. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the Joe and Abe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the benefit screening of Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, on Friday, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center in Portland. Arresting Power documents the history of conflict between the Portland police and community members throughout the past 50 years. The film features personal stories of resistance told by victims of police misconduct, the families of people who were killed by police, and members of Portland reform and abolition movements. The screening is a benefit for the Portland chapter of the NAACP. Again, that's a screening of the documentary film Arresting Power, Friday, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Liberation Literacy is a racial justice reading group at Columbia River Correctional Institution in Portland.
We are students of revolutionary politics that have long been forgotten. The Harriet Tubmans, the Nat Turners, the Angela Davises, and the Malcolm X's, who recognized the systemic injustice in our country and saw themselves as active agents in fighting for change.
We meet weekly to discuss and reimagine the relationship between incarceration, our community, and ourselves.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on July 10th to hear our discussion with National Book Award winner, historian Dr. Ibram X. Kendi, about his book, Stamped from the Beginning.
That's Prison Pipeline, July 10th at 6:30 p.m.
Hey, good morning. Yes, this is KBOO, and yes, this is July 4th, and yes, that is the French national anthem, La Marseillaise, and yes, I am going to be butchering French today with a very good friend and visitor from France, my friend Penny Allen, who I've known for years and is a dual citizen, I believe,
right,
of France and the United States. And that's an amazing thing in and of itself. I didn't even know that could happen. I don't think it can happen anymore.
Yes, it can.
It can? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I could do that?
Well, you'd have a hard time doing it with your French.
My French? Thank you very much. Okay, I will cop to the fact that my French is just about as bad as it can be. A little beyond the fourth grade schoolboy, but not near the fifth grade schoolboy. Anyway, well, we're talking with Penny a little bit about European politics and about the new government in France. And we'll also be talking about, at least I will be trying to make some comparisons between what's going on in Europe and the crazy evil that has overtaken the national politics of the United States. And, of course, we want to hear from you. And, of course, this is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, and this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe is not here because he's run away with his family to have a vacation, and I haven't. Instead, I have Penny Allen with me. So, if you have questions, feel free to call, 231-8187. Penny and I will talk a little bit, and then we'll open it up for you all. And I will make enormous political and Frenchish blunders. I'm not going to attempt to talk French because I know better. Penny will correct me. Penny was in, I have to tell you, in the French department at Portland State University. She is the author of Sisters.
No, it's called A Geography of Saints.
Oh, sorry, A Geography of Saints, which I actually read.
Which takes place in Sisters, right?
Ah, yes. Okay, and in addition to that, she has made several movies, one of which I had one of the most minor speaking roles ever, a really funny, beautiful movie called Property. And she's made several things since then. Property, by the way, had Gus Van Sant as the sound person and Eric Edwards as the cinematographer.
Yeah, and it was our first movie for all of us.
And I just loved it.
Yeah. Well,
movie I'm in, I just love.
I'm happy to say that it continues on. It has a life, and it plays the various places. It played recently in New York.
Do I ever get applause anymore?
Yes, people always laugh at your line. It's great. It's brilliant.
I'm so egotistical. Yes, it's wonderful. no, but it is a very good and very timely movie even now about the whole issue of land ownership and control.
And gentrification.
And gentrification, yes. So, Penny, I am terribly confused about what's going on in European politics. And I'm not going to try to cast you as an expert about everything in Europe or even in France, but I do want to know, who the hell is this Macron character?
Macron.
Well, you got to have all that nasal stuff.
You have to get the R in there, Macron.
Macron.
Right. And
you'll correct me every time I say it. Anyway.
No, well, he's the new president of France, he is a very interesting person. He's very young. He's only 39 years old, and people say he came out of nowhere, which isn't really true. He had been the economy minister of economy for François Hollande, and a few other things probably, but he started his campaign by stepping outside of all of the traditional parties. And, he had a movement that was called En Marche, which, moving forward or something like that. And it was really hard for most French people to understand what was happening, because the French always hew very much to traditional party lines. And it was a great idea, because most of the parties are extremely, outdated and no longer effective. Unfortunately, Hollande's Socialist Party in the last presidency was a complete disaster. So it was a very brilliant idea for him to step outside of that. And, people were gradually pulled into it, excuse me, and they, they appreciated what was his originality.
Well, first of all, the Socialist Party, the Communist Party collapsed with the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was the largest or second largest party for a long, long time in
France.
France,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And similarly in Italy. And with that collapse, it seemed to me that the inevitable consequence would be a enlargement of the Socialist Party and perhaps even a move to the left. Meanwhile, I know there was a party d'écologie, and there were various other minor parties that were to the left, significantly to the left of both the communists and the socialists. And that left has left, can't resist it, things in French politics now. But this guy, Macron. Oh, come on, tell me how to say it.
Yeah, get that R in there.
Macron.
Macron.
Macron. Just clear your throat. Macron. Right. Okay. Seems to me, aside from being a young man and an ambitious man, obviously, also very bright.
He's very bright, and he's very eloquent, and he is very French in the sense that he speaks in abstractions, and is sometimes
like Trump. Abstractions like Trump.
No. No, not at all. No, he's intellectually speaking, he is a complete opposite of
Trump.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The only thing they have in common is they sort of, they purported to step outside the traditional structure. But actually, Macron is pulling it off. And he, one of the things that he announced after he had won the presidency was that, because he had to then win the legislature. In France, if you don't win the legislature, you can't govern. So it was like a two-step or a three-step process. But one of the things that he announced was the people that were going to run for legislative office, deputies and senators, had to be 50% women, 50% women, and 50% with no previous governmental experience. And once again, that is just totally un-French, because people in France, in all realms of life, only move through the process of starting at the bottom and moving up and moving up and moving up. And rarely do people come in at a higher level and get to participate. But he won. I mean, he won 2/3 of the vote for his legislation. So it's kind of a never before seen. I have to tell you that I thought briefly about deciding to run for that office.
Really?
Right. I did think about it. Yes, because I can, as a French person, I can do it. But I'm otherwise occupied because I'm making a new movie. But I really thought about it. I was very drawn by it, and it would sort of be in a thread of out of my previous activities, previous life. But I could have. The only thing is, you have to. They all had to finance themselves or find financing, because in France, political campaigns are financed by the percentage, on the basis of the percentage of your vote in the previous election. Well, since the party, his group, his party, his movement didn't exist in the previous election, there was no money, so everyone was self-financed, and that I'm sure that altered the slate of who ran.
Well, wouldn't that favor the rich?
Absolutely. No, not the rich, but the middle class. It did favor the, you know, sort of people in like teachers. A lot of teachers ran and won.
Well, they hit people with rulers on the knuckles in France.
Well, that's what your opinion is. I don't know.
No, don't take that seriously. Okay. I'm sorry. I think Americans enjoy making fun of the French. And yet, and this is an important point in why we're doing this on this date, aside from the fact that you happen to be in town, the French Revolution, which I would say went terrifyingly bad with the terror at the later stages, which led eventually to Napoleon in an attempt to conquer all of Europe, nevertheless was a real and total revolution, throwing out the old system, which was the royalist system, and a very degenerate system in many, many ways. Peasants suffered. There had been, interestingly enough, some improvement in the lives of people prior to that revolution, but it was clear that the people of France desired a change. And there were, it's very complicated, there was also revolutionary behavior on the Eastern Front of France. I mean, a lot of things were going on. But France has also endured a number of attempts at revolution, 1830, 1848. There was the defeat by the Germans in the Franco-Prussian War, which led to the creation of the Communards, which is a kind of communist movement that seized control of parts of Paris and attempted to establish a communist government, which was overthrown with the cooperation of the Prussians with the French remainder of the French government, and resulted in the slaughtering of a whole bunch of leftists. They were lined up at a wall, one of the places where they were killed, at Père Lachaise Cemetery, and blown away. You can see the bullet hole pockmarks on the wall of the cemetery today.
Right.
So it's a much more bloody history within the country itself.
Well, it's also a much more politicized country in general than the United States. People are very alert to what's going on, and they follow it, and they argue about it all the time. I mean, since this election, you know, since in this period, it's just been amazing to me where, you know, any kind of group that I happen to walk into, you know, people say, who'd you vote for? And, you know, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And everyone's already, they're talking about it immediately. That is the subject. And that's great. You know, I mean, I think it's a much more active democracy than here.
Well, I also think people, my impression, my French is terrible and my comprehension is not very good, but it's not. I mean, you know, so my impression with a few visits to France is not only that people are aware, but that it is normal for people to be advocates of Marxism or other systems to the left, anarchism, and that is not considered outside the realm of rational discourse.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I very nearly voted for Mélenchon, who is a Marxist and the most left of the candidates, and he's a terrific guy, and I really liked his platform. And the only reason that I hesitated and then finally decided to vote for Macron was because of assuring that Macron would win against Marine Le Pen, the extreme right candidate. And a lot of people voted for Macron for that reason. Some of them quite hesitant. Maybe that was similar to the last election in the United States, where people hesitantly or reluctantly voted for Hillary Clinton when they weren't 100% sold on her. But there was a lot of that happened. But since that time, I think Macron has really, penetrated the spirit of this of the populace. You know, he's pretty well liked.
Well, apparently, not only is he well liked, but he also is attempting to redefine and redevelop the relationship between the French people and the government, which is, Americans probably don't know this, but an extremely bureaucratized system. Even opening a business becomes a complex series of papers to be filled out and bureaus to deal with and so on. And it makes it very, the kind of entrepreneurship we see in the United States, with all of its faults, is a lot easier to operate in than is France.
Right, that's correct. And he really wants to change a lot of things, and it's very welcome. But he does, well, apparently he made a speech, I wasn't there, but he made a speech just yesterday in France to all of the members of parliament, and saying that he wants a contractual relationship with the French population. And by that, I assume that he means that if people don't like what he's doing, that he wants to hear about it and he wants to know that he's not fulfilling his contract. And I think that's, it's not just blah blah. I think that he actually means it because he's already functioning like that. He was in the last government with Hollande. He was a partner in a new law, new labor law, a new work law, and which was not well received by the left in France. And so he's now being criticized for that, for something in the past. But he has already said, we're going to completely rework that with the participation of the entire population, because he wants it to be something that everyone can buy into. Well, of course, that'll never happen, that everyone will buy into it. But it's just the fact that he's willing to to take that up again and to reconsider it and to make it more, more of an answer to the problems that work, because France has tremendous problems in labor law and work law. So,
well, yes. I mean, just to put it very simply, it's hard to hire and very hard to fire. And this is good in the sense that workers have more of job security than in the United States, but it makes it very difficult to be flexible. And the United States is kind of the ultimate opposite of that. Workers are work at the discretion of the owner class, and it's often very harsh and very difficult.
Well, I wouldn't want France to give up all those hard-won rights, workers' rights. That would be a mistake. And Macron is now saying yes, it would be a mistake to do that, and so that must not happen.
Well, part of the reason I brought you here is quite honestly the fact that you are a citizen of Europe, not just to France. And what's happening in Europe to me, and I'm very ignorant on this subject, but I think I understand, is an attempt to redefine the relationships, as he suggests in a contract, amongst the people and the governments. And we're seeing that in the context of this enormous Dick Cheney created wars which have led in turn to enormous numbers of people who are culturally different than Europeans, who have flooded into Europe desperately seeking to survive. And this has been greeted in various places of Hungary and Austria and various places viciously, and not well at all in some parts of France. The jungles that developed at the entrances to the British railway.
The tunnel.
The
right.
tunnel. Is
the tunnel.
Tunnel, yes, is a horrendous thing. And we are also seeing a great deal, and this is where Le Pen was able to succeed to some degree, a great deal of really racist thinking and racist talk.
Right. Well, a vein of the French population that has steadily been about 35%, and she didn't really go higher than that ever, although people were fearful that she might. But I really didn't have too much doubt that she would lose. But anyway, to talk about Europe, Europe has you know, the European Union is severely challenged right now because of multiple problems, and they were really they really came to the surface when all countries with all their varying capacities, economic capacities, were suddenly made to have to function in a economic way that equal to Germany, which is an extremely successful economy. And of course that didn't work, you know, and people probably remember that, you know, that Greece went belly up and, you know, it has been bailed out a couple of times. Well, they're not the only country that is suffering from that. And people are very, very tired. This is what Le Pen, you know, made use of. People are very tired of regulation and coming out of the European Union and of countries losing their sovereignty. And so those are really problems, and they're definitely exacerbated by the arrival of hundreds of thousands of refugees, 1 million so far in Germany. Which is incredible.
Right. And interestingly, the German government, which is fundamentally conservative, has welcomed these people.
Well, they handled it well. They're handling it well, which is really impressive. I mean, different countries are handling it differently. One of the things that is happening in Italy, which is, I don't know if it's a model for here, but or a model even for France, but there are hundreds of abandoned villages in Italy. You know, there are no people there, but the buildings are still there. And so the Italians are setting up communities in those villages of refugees. And since so many refugees, they're of all kinds. You know, there are doctors and dentists as well as people from Sub-Sahara that don't even, you know, they're illiterate. So they're setting up communities that actually function in Italy, and it's kind of amazing. France is not doing very well in that front. You know, I think France is only allowed in 10,000 compared to Germany's 1 million. And, you know, France has never done well with the integration of any of its arrivals, including the North African population.
Well, I don't want to create a false comparison or false parallelism, but the United States has had a long history of mixed behavior toward immigrants before World War II, and actually in the 19th century there were laws. For example, there was a Chinese exclusion law, totally racist. There were efforts to keep Chinese women out so that there would not be a development of a significant Chinese community. The Irish were treated as and insulted as if they were monkeys when they came. They were the first major force. Germans, even Germans who were a large part of the American community in the 19th century, were poorly treated. In the eve of World War II, Jews, desperate to escape the Nazis, were turned away from the United States. And anti-Semitism was a normative expectation in the United States until the discovery of the Holocaust. And this is something we don't like to talk about, but it's really true. There was a very interesting movie made called Gentleman's Agreement, which revealed, and a very popular movie after World War II, that revealed the truth of the matter of the difficulty of educated Jewish people from getting jobs in the United States. And in fact, I think a lot of the creation of Israel had to do with a way of easing the pressure upon the United States and Europe in dealing with the experience of the Holocaust, which was a moral dilemma of enormous importance and of course, a horrible thing in the world. So the creation of the State of Israel became a sacred duty, and I would use that deliberately, sacred duty, which ignored, amazingly, the fact of the reality of what Palestine was for the people of that region, and ignored the fact of how, at the end of World War I, essentially the European powers divided up arbitrarily the Arab world and supported the Saudi Arabians with their Wahhabi extreme forms of Islam, which to this day, I mean, anyone who pays any attention to the news watched the fool who poses as the President of the United States at this time holding on to the orb, the glowing orb, or doing a little dance with a sword out of rhythm with the Arab princes. I mean, And we're currently engaging in a support for Saudi Arabia, which has become a murderous power in the peninsula. This is all real stuff that Americans can read about in the news but not feel the impact of. Meanwhile, President Trump, cuckoo man, the mean Nazi cuckoo, is engaging in incredibly dangerous politics. He's flirting with the dangerous positions with China on North Korea. He is absolutely, I think, possibly the most ignorant man ever to hold the office. And we had a lot of ignorant presidents.
Right. Well, on that subject, you know, I don't know how many people here know about the fact that, well, I mean, of course, you know that Trump's tweeted that he had information that there was another chemical attack being planned in Syria. And then he said something like, and they're going to pay for this in a big way. And right after that, the next day, Macron, the French president, invited Trump to come to Paris for Bastille Day, which is the 14th of July. And the first, you know, my first reaction was, what? You know, I mean, well, first of all, why would, you know, because Trump is totally hated in France, and Macron did humiliate him at that G7, you know, in twice even. So it was hard to understand at first. And also I thought, oh, well, I don't think it would be a great idea if he got assassinated. And if he's participating in a march on the Champs-Élysées, you know, that seems inevitable. Anyway, but that is not what was happening. And I think they have canceled his participation in the march. He won't be in public. But what it had to do with...
Well, he's going to be in the bulletproof reviewing stand.
Right. But what it really had to do with was Macron's desire to bring this rogue into the fold in relation to Syria so that he doesn't go off and bomb them again, you know, in a totally isolated way, because there are other countries that are involved in that situation with Syria, and he wants to bring him into the fold, basically wants to control him. This is what I've read in the French press since I've been here, and it certainly makes sense, because Macron is a very serious person, and he's capable of doing that, although I don't think Trump is capable of that kind of rationality. We'll have to see what happens.
Apparently he was participating in odd sexual behaviors and got filmed doing it, which I love, of course. And,
Trump was.
Trump.
Yes.
Not Macron.
Not Macron, yes.
I mean, Trump is at first he was much feared within the Republican Party because he was such an outlier, but in fact they now find that they can use him because he's so stupid. And he created a cabinet only of very, 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 very wealthy and powerful industrialists. It is a very bizarre situation. In a way, it's tearing away the facade of democracy in America to reveal the heart of its capitalist enterprise. But of course, one thing that I think even listeners at this station who are pretty hip on all these issues may not realize is that we are all victims of Dick Cheney's war in favor of oil. This is really a significant thing. Dick Cheney and his supporters in the petrochemical business essentially created the disasters that we're seeing in the Arabian Peninsula. I mean, the decision of the United States to create a government in Iraq, which was not a Sunni, which was Shia, and the lack of understanding of the differences, which to me, and I have to say this, are small between the two. Yet
they're not. I mean, it's intractable. I mean, you can't go against the separations between Shia and Sunni. And it seems that. You know, Trump knows nothing of that, and all the people who are making decisions about the Middle East right now seem to know nothing about that, and it is the determining factor there.
Right. So what we're looking at is a chaotic, weird struggle in the midst of which is a dying industry, inevitably, I believe, if we're going to have any kind of survival of the planet, the petrochemical industry, and at the same time. Really, Trump has no interest in the traditions of democracy. I mean, it's really creepy. really creepy. He is a fascist clown. And we have to live with that. And our press, with its pretend neutrality, which Trump attacks by calling it failing, but its pretend neutrality is even it has had to turn against him because he's so absurd and stupid. Meanwhile, we have a Congress which is intractably to the right and is more about party than country. I mean, this is a really serious situation for the United States. Serious situations going on in Europe of a different sort, and I see all of this being very, very scary. Trump is now telling China that he's going to go it alone against North Korea, and North Korea is a dangerous, crazy place with nuclear weapons. I mean, it's all really, really weird, and I don't know how much people in this country really pay attention because we're, in our imaginations at least, still isolated from the rest of the world.
Well, for a while it looked like China was going to be able to sort of bring Trump into the fold in relation to North Korea, and they may yet again be able to. I mean, I think with Trump, that people, leaders that he respects, have to keep at it. They have to keep working at it, you know.
A lot of hand-holding.
It's a lot of hand-holding. They can't stop, you know, because he will do whatever the last person he talked to suggested. And so even with Macron trying to bring him into the fold with behavior in Syria, he'll have to keep at it. It'll have to happen all the time. Normally, that sort of hand-holding occurs in the diplomatic level with ambassadors and with, you know, the staff.
The knowledgeable people.
The knowledgeable people, but that is not the case with Trump.
It's very weird. I wonder, this is really a talk show, and you and I are talking, and I hope people are finding our conversation interesting, but maybe there are some folks out there who want to add something or ask something. So the number to call, 231-8187. It is a holiday, and I know people are probably sitting around getting ready to blow their fingers off with their explosives and so on. But do we have any callers? No, no callers yet. Well, it either means people are fascinated or they've gone away. We have no way of knowing. I really am glad you're here. I think that one of the most frightening aspects of the American nationalist endeavor is our pretense of being safely isolated from the world. And it is now a pretense. When missiles in anywhere from a half an hour to 2 hours can hit the United States with nuclear weapons of enormous power, and various countries ranging from Pakistan and India to North Korea, and of course the European powers, can send these missiles at each other on a moment's notice, at a whim, and when you have a president of the United States who doesn't even understand the implications of nuclear war, and when you consider the fact that this guy's sole knowledge base is in sleazy, mafia-ish or mafia-esque events in the real estate business in New York City, I mean, it's really, really terrifying. And when you consider that 30% of the American people are fundamentally nationalists and hostile to any kind of cooperative endeavor and don't even understand the importance of the systems that provide them with healthcare and so on, it is a very terrifying thing, and it is a thing of such great gravity. And yet, and here's where I'm kind of confused in my own mind, it's pretty funny in a harsh, cynical way. It's pretty funny. Are we getting what we deserve after all this historical lying?
Oh, that's a pretty... Right, pretty cynical
take. I'm pretty bitter. I'm
pretty bitter
really
take
bitter.
On things. Yeah. But I was going to say that I am impressed. Coming here, but also reading in the press when I'm in France about how many people in the United States are participating right now and protesting. And I think I read that there were all sorts of demonstrations just in the last couple of days to impeach Trump.
To impeach
Trump, and I think that's great. That is happening, and may it continue, and may it grow.
Well, let's take some of these callers. 231-8187. Who do we got?
Helen,
you're on the air.
Welcome back, Penny. How are you?
Good.
I want to know: isn't it true that the wife is a very large influence to Makar, whatever, you know, I can't say his name right, that without her, he wouldn't be who he is?
Well, she is fabulous. She is a terrific woman, and it's a, you know, it's a marriage that probably only the French would love, mm-hmm. because she is 24 years older than he is. But it's, they have a wonderful past. You know, she was his drama coach when he was about 15, and there was he had an immediate attraction for her, and kind of pressed for her to. You know, get closer and get closer. But she was married at the time, and his family sent him away to Paris to go to school, and so he was gone for, I don't know, 8 years or something like that. And then, when he left, even as a teenager, he said to Brigitte, he said, "I'm going to come back and marry you." And so after his studies, he did come back and marry her, which was just, you know, an incredible thing. I mean, they have a really close relationship, and she's, yes, she is. I mean, she was a drama coach, so she does, you know, help in his speeches and in his the delivery of his speeches. But it's a marriage that fascinates all of the French people. Brigitte Macron is now getting 300 letters a day.
Wow.
Which is just probably most of them say, "I'm a teacher and I'm in love with this 16-year-old student. What should I do?" But maybe not. Maybe they're saying more serious things than that.
Yeah. Okay.
We take such relationships in this country very seriously. Anyway, thank you very much for the call, Helen.
Thanks.
All right, who else do we have? BT, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Joe. Hey, you know, yeah, so this last call, I just touched slightly on another point I was going to make. There is another similarity between your French president and Trump, and that's the huge age difference between them and their wives. Although Trump went the other way because he would have to find someone who's about 100.
We're going to ignore that, but you're right. He likes younger women, yep. And he likes women who are very surfacely attractive and who I gather don't make much of an intellectual impact on him.
Yeah. Also, I didn't like the idea of having a first lady who was picked out of a lineup. You know, these people with money, they'll pick someone from the latest, you know, Miss Slovenia contest or something.
Well, but you know, Trump is notorious for putting on, I think it was Miss Universe, and loving to watch these young women, mostly teenagers, dressing and undressing. I mean, he's a creep!
Well, anyway, so I just want to get something else. Now, Penny, I think I have a pretty good memory. I believe that you were the person that Joe was interviewing via phone when you were in Paris right after that terrorist explosion at a concert in Paris in
right.
December.
The Bataclan incident, yes.
Yeah, well, I was at work, and I couldn't call. As a matter of fact, I haven't been able to call for a long time. But you made an interesting point there that a lot of people on the left seem to gloss over on these things because it's all about your foreign policy and things. And you said that these people will see something like that concert as decadence. And that's something that I don't think enough people are talking about. Changes in foreign policy and in throwing... being real nice and isn't going to change that, because if you go back to people like Kutub, Saeed Kutub from Egypt, who wrote who spent some time in America in the late 40s, and he just hated the, you know, quote, decadence, unquote, of the West, and he started writing about this, that this is what we need to keep out of the Mideast and also, you know, get rid of it in general. That's not going to go away no matter what kind of foreign policy you have. And I think that if people begin to accept a tax every month or every other month in a number of countries, that's just a green light to these people. And they'll say, hey, look, these stupid Europeans are letting us kill them. They're not going to do anything about it.
Well, I think what I said about the Bataclan thing was, you know, that there was talk of the afterwards, you know, because of things that the actual terrorists said, since they were present with all the people that they had captured in the Bataclan, they said things about decadence and about you know, the wasted lives and you deserve to die because of the silly things you do and all that sort of thing. And I think, you know, there but that is the extremist Wahhabi and Wahhabist kind of Islam that thinks that way. It isn't necessarily all of the, you know, it's certainly not all of the Muslims in France think that way. But so I think that's probably what I was saying. But to go on to what you were just saying, the French certainly are doing something about the you know, the terrorist incidents that have occurred there, and I'm quite impressed actually with how much they've accomplished in it.
Yeah, well, there's some they can do, but I don't know where the line will be drawn. But this thing with the decadence, that was actually stuff that's been written about for years. It wasn't just a comment after that. And the way I'd like to just use a quote from Roosevelt or borrow a little, where say, hey, our response should be, is, hey, look, if it's decadence, it's our decadence, and don't come here and change it.
Okay, I'm going to
okay, John.
I'm going to let you go, but I do want to point out one very important fact, may be the elephant in the room regarding France. The French, in modern French history, France attempted to keep its North African possessions by creating a larger metropolitan France. There was an incredible struggle, violent struggle, particularly in Algeria, with much misbehavior on the part of the French armed forces. And in the end, that did not hold. That meant that the vast number of French people, called Blackfeet in English, moved into France and were a right-wing terrorist. Some of them, not a lot, were right-wing terrorists doing bombings when I was first in France.
Right,
and
right.
It was scary. That at the same time, the enormous population of people of Arab and Islamic origin that came to France out of those countries in the north, what, Maghreb, is that how you say it?
In Maghreb, uh-huh.
Yeah, those people have been discriminated against, virtually locked into cold Stalinist style suburbs of Paris for years and years, and are very angry. We've seen some riots and reactions, but they're not reacting on a religious or moral ground. They're reacting on a socioeconomic ground of
exclusion.
And poor opportunities for jobs and so on.
Right. The people in who are residents of France who have committed those acts in recent years are actually not in living in those public housing units outside of Paris. Most of them are from further away than Paris.
Uh-huh.
But it's it's still the same idea that is happening. Okay, well, let's take another call.
Yeah, let's go. Who do we got? Ted.
Good morning.
Ted, you going to give us a talk?
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys if you had any idea why Manafort and Flynn and Jeff Sessions and all these unregistered representatives from these foreign governments aren't considered spies.
Yeah, well, this is something we can't answer why. We can acknowledge that it's probably the case.
I think we should all just start calling them spies and be done with it.
Okay.
Okay.
We're with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, man.
Thanks.
All right, who else we got?
Francis,
you're on the air.
Hi. I, first of all, would like to say I truly appreciate the relationship with the couple that's the new president of France. But what I want to do today, since it's the 4th of July and we're celebrating our independence and freedom, is acknowledge the millions, literally millions of Americans who are incarcerated right now in this country, and especially those who are in solitary confinement. And I hope that they are able to maintain their freedom in their minds. One thing you spoke about, these wars and how they're for oil, and I agree that they are for whatever resources in the country, and what's happening in Africa is just as alarming right now. The exploitation of the resources and the people and the oppression of the people. But it has to be, I don't know if you are familiar with the bill that Tulsi Gabbard has presented, which pretty much explains how our financing of these wars is actually financing the so-called terrorists. And the money that's being made from arms trade and arms deals is devastating.
No, that's
the people,
true.
The people who are profiting from war, from conflict, from constant promotion of conflict, are the culprits, as far as I'm concerned, at the expense of babies and women and children. And I don't know how we can go on pretending that it's something else.
No, I think you're right, and I think it's good.
When we speak about dealing with terrorist acts,
yeah,
quote unquote, we need to look at the root causes, which you touched on a little bit, of how people become that, quote-unquote, radicalized.
No, I think you're absolutely
if we
right.
Look at the terrorist activities of those who are making literally bank off of war. Then, once we resolve that issue, we can resolve the rest of the terrorist acts.
Francis, I agree with you. I want to give some others an opportunity, and I think the points you made are very good, but I want to move on to other people, if you don't mind.
All right, then, peace.
Okay, thank you. And I think it is important to understand. I mean, one of the things that I keep trying to grapple with here and elsewhere is the fact of the matter is the fact that American people are incredibly and I think willfully naive about the role of the United States in world history. I also think that when we're celebrating July 4th, we have to mention the fact that this constitutional republic was created to the destruction of Native American peoples, to the enslavement of African Americans, to the absolute disavowal of the legitimacy of women as citizens, and people who don't own land. The original Constitution was a very conservative document, essentially enshrining a landholding and merchant class of white men at the cost of everybody else. I just want to make clear my thinking on that. Let's go on to other callers. 231-8187.
We have
Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air. He's not on the air for me.
What?
Oh, I'm not hearing him. We're having a little technical issue here. Oh, Jeff, are you
Hello?
There? Oh, good.
I'm here.
Great. Hi.
Hi. So I have a question, and I recently read an article in The Atlantic that, if I understood it correctly, hypothesized that mixing cultures without really integrating them has driven people away from the left and into the right. And I think that phenomenon may be applicable both to the United States and also to Europe. And since we have scholars from both continents, I wondered if you'd comment on that.
Well, I'm pleased to be called a scholar, but I don't know how Penny feels about that. But you're right. I mean, in fact, the failure of integration of cultural groups, more importantly, the failure of the country to give equality in every sense creates this problem. It's entirely possible for people to live in their own cultural worlds and share as long as they are given equal rights and equal services and equal opportunities. That does not happen in the United States, and I'm not sure that it happens very well in France.
No, it does not. It doesn't happen very well in France, but you can follow the chain, you know, of people or the of events. You know, if people if Muslim people arrive and they are discriminated against, and then their kids are mistreated in school, and they grow up and they're angry and they become radicalized. Well, and then they do something. Well, that all that does is spark dislike from the major population of France, and so what you're entirely right that it does move some people from leftist thinking or from open kind of thinking and progressive thinking to resentment, and it shows up then in increased votes for the right. That is exactly what has happened in France, and it's I have no solution for it, unfortunately, nobody has any solution for it. Maybe Macron will make some progress in that issue.
Well, I think, it really is, first of all, a problem that needs to be acknowledged in each society by the majority of the people. And then there needs to be actual legislative and cultural changes being made. And I think one of the things that happens in American progressivism is there is an effort in that direction. But the fact of the matter is that the reason, there are several reasons why Trump got to be president of the United States. First of all, we must not forget the interference of Russia in the election. That's real and it's serious. And it happened in the case of Brexit. And I think it was attempted in Holland and elsewhere.
And it happened in the French election, too.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. And I think it's very serious and really needs to be dealt with. The fact of the matter is that the Russian government is a predator. Yeah, well, it's pretty scary. And there was recently Oliver Stone interview with Putin that was, to me, very distressing because Stone acted like an idiot and Putin acted like a clever fella. And it was really, really weird. But it was desirable to watch it, to listen to it, because it was the only lengthy discourse between an American and a Russian at all. And even though it was Putin's manipulative game, it was informative. Go ahead.
Well, may I argue that while that may well be true, there was another group that interfered in the election considerably, I think, and that's called the Democratic National Committee. We might have had Bernie Sanders as president.
I'm not going to argue with that. I think there's much to be said for that position. I think the Democratic Party has lost itself. The Republican Party has turned out to be the party to hold power regardless of anything and is very quasi-fascist. On the other hand, the leadership of the Democratic Party has been very disappointing and, in fact, behaved in a disgraceful way regarding Bernie.
I'd like to say something that goes back to what you said, the caller said, about the process of integration, and that I do want to say that one of the things that the French have done that seems to work is to make a requirement. And this is already a policy that's something like 25 years old. They make a requirement that all that public housing, which is where a lot of North Africans end up, and certainly where people with limited means end up, that it must be everywhere. That it can't be, you know, just as you said, ringing the outskirts of Paris, where it was pretty awful and continues to be pretty awful. But that is the case, and so public housing units, millions, thousands of which are built every year in France, are everywhere. They're even in the rich arrondissement in Paris. You know, and it's not easy for that to happen because people in those arrondissements resist, but it happens. And I mean, and that's definitely a move toward integration.
Thank you.
Can I make one other point? And I think, unless I'm mischaracterizing the Atlantic, that one of the points they made is that some countries integrate to some extent. I mean, they're...
He's coming and going. What happened?
We're having some technical problems. I'm going to have to let you go, not because you're not as a criticism, but we're just losing you.
Oh, if I'm here now,
go ahead.
Would you comment on the necessity of having some common culture in a country and asking people who come into that country to integrate? For a number of reasons. I mean, one being that people with small minds don't like people who don't look like them. But it's handy to have a country with a certain common culture.
Well, that's true, and I'm going to let you go now, and we're going to comment on that. You're thinking here?
Well, you know, I've always thought that there was little requirement for that to happen in the United States. And so, as a result, it is a very mixed culture, and you know, people stay sort of who they are when they arrived. I'm not sure that I'm right in saying that, but it seems like that is the case. You know, so American culture functions that way. That's how it functions.
And I agree and disagree. I agree with what you just said, but The unifying culture of America is fundamentally a system of purchasing and selling, buying and selling,
right.
and fundamentally a culture of consumer capitalism.
Right, and so that's where the problems
and
occur.
And so what is the great leveler in our country is a question of what kind of car to have, not whether or not to have an automobile, what kind of an automobile, what kind of cereal to eat in the morning, all kinds of stupid, really stupid and petty things, rather than an examination, which is attempted by the officials in a way on holidays like this of a unity, of a plea for unity in America, but it's very superficial. And I think huge numbers of Americans, far too large a number of working, particularly working class and middle class people, have been shut out because the world has changed and the system is not educating people to this new world, and because there is really lack of respect for ordinary people and their lives, as well as being a very poor educational system. I just want to throw that out there, ha ha ha.
I can't really comment on, you know, how that applies to France, you know, whether or not there is greater isolation, it's usually of the Muslim community, of the Arab community, than in this country. So I guess I just don't have a picture of it.
Well, I think, you know, the only comparison I can make, and it's not really that apt, would be the endless isolation and discrimination against persons of color here. And it is a disgraceful and never-ending problem. Most Americans are not aware, for example, of the way during the Depression, huge numbers of Mexican Americans, without any due process, were put into trains and sent to Mexico. I mean, there's many, many things like that. Not to mention the behavior toward African Americans, which is still a major inequality that continues on. Black Lives Matter is, for example, a very good movement challenging the way in which law enforcement operates in this society. And we see it. I mean, just almost every month, perhaps even every week, some stupid police person blows away some hapless African American for no reason or the most minor of reasons. It's horrible and it's disgusting and it's unbearably oppressive. And all of this must be remedied, and how it's to be remedied when, in fact, the so-called Liberal Party, the Democratic Party, is profoundly more about getting power than it is about getting justice. And I think that's really, really a great challenge. And meanwhile, the Republican Party has turned into the party of wealth and misrepresentation, and essentially only concerned with establishing a power base, a further power base for the wealthy. It's very scary, and it needs to be addressed. Let's go to the phones, though. 231-8187. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi, Penny. This is Katie Raddatz.
Ah, hi.
Hi. I missed the very beginning, Joe, of the show, but so are you here, Penny?
Yes, I'm here live, yes.
Oh, here live. I wanted to ask you about the independent press in France now, you know, beginning with what happened at Charlie Hebdo. What's the influence there, and do you want to just comment on that a bit about independent publishing?
Well, it's very alive and well. That's for sure. You know, Charlie Hebdo sold several million copies of the initial issues that followed the incident that occurred in their office, where many of their staff members were murdered. And so they are well financed now, so they're certainly not going under it. And that is one example. But I would say that it's very alive and well. You know, the France is still covered with kiosks that have lots and lots of publications on them, unlike the United States, I think. I don't know how to answer it exactly. You know, it's not necessarily a subject that I explore very often. But I think it's very alive.
Well, I think I want to thank our caller. I'm going to let you go, Katie. Maybe we'll try to get one more person in.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Penny.
Mm-hmm.
LJ, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Whoa. Okay.
Bonjour. Comment allez-vous?
Oh, très bien. Merci. Et vous?
Okay. Good. Real good. Okay. Just a couple of quick things because I know you're running out of time.
Got to be fast.
Real fast. The 1968 French Revolution, if you can touch on that, and the horrible treatment of the Algerians by the French. And au revoir.
Okay. Too much information, too big a subject.
Well, actually, what happened in 1968 was not a revolution. It was not a revolution. It did not see that to that level, to that extent. I mean, it certainly did change things. It changed the whole education system, and it changed people's heads. It was a strong cultural influence for a long time.
And I have to add that the decision of the former left, the French Communist Party, not to join in it. It was an incredibly important decision in many, many ways, and the implications of that are huge. And it's really valid to say it was not a revolution.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
but I know a lot of people who are romantically attached to it even today. The Soixante Huiteurs, as they call themselves.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think it's fading a little bit, but it's still a significant cultural movement, or it was. To say that I should say something about the exclusion of Muslim or Arab populations in fewer than 5 zillion words, you know, I don't think I can.
Okay, I think we're kind of running out of time. Is that true? That's true. And I want to thank you, Penny Allen, for being with me.
Thank you very much, Joe.
I always enjoy talking with you, especially on the radio. And you all out there, don't blow your fingers off. And remember, it's really not about the freedom of all Americans. It's really about the creation of a republic.
Through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Fest, June 30th through July 4th, from noon to 10 p.m. Tune in to hear sets from Big Head Blues Club, Chris Isaac, Corey Henry and the Funk Apostles, the Pimps of Joy Time, Bofar Katuri, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival benefit for the Oregon Food Bank, Saturday, June 30th through July 4th, noon to 10 p.m. every day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934.